Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're speaking with elite marathon runner Rose Harvey.
Thanks very much for having me again.
No, great. I think last time we talked to you, it was in March and you just run sub 230 in Seville.
Yep.
Decent bit of running.
Yep, 227.20.
And then you backed it up in London. You were first British female in London. That must have been an amazing day out.
Yeah. Oh, it was incredible. And just somehow all the stars aligned. And it was honestly, I mean, I don't think I had... It was one of those days that happens so infrequently in elite running, but just everything just fell together. And I had absolutely no expectations for that. I think I had the least expectations for any race of my career so far. But yeah, somehow I pulled it off and it was just the most amazing day.
Yeah.
You had been hit by a car a few days before the race. So when the stars aligned, that's probably not the stars that you wanted to align for that race. But so what happened there? You went in banged up.
Yeah, I went in pretty banged up and training had actually gone pretty well, but it had been a really short build up. So I was confident, but I was thinking, you know, I haven't had the ideal prep. I competed at World Championships in Oregon and got COVID. So I also had that it took a little while to bounce back from that and actually get into training. So it was a really short build up, but it all gone really well. And then, 10 days before the race, I was just doing an easy run down to the common and a car pulled out their driveway and went straight into me. Or I went straight into the side of their bonnet. And my knee basically took the full brunt of it, tried to jog it off, got down, hobbled down to the bottom of the road and was like, nah, this isn't happening. So I went back, several packs of peas on the knee and, woke up the next morning and basically couldn't move it. So
wow.
The next 10 days were a bit of a struggle, and I remember I was in the Elite Hotel the day before, and I jogged 3 miles, and I couldn't do any strides. And I was like, how the hell am I going to get through a marathon?
Yeah.
But, you know, you're there, and no one knew about my knee either at the Elite Hotel.
So you kept it secret, basically.
Yeah. I was basically in denial. and thinking, right, if I don't think about it, maybe it won't be as bad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's like, well... either start or I don't start. There's nothing else I can do. So I just, went in and thought, we're going to try and enjoy it.
So did the you say you had like no very limited expectation for the race. Was that because of the short build-up or the knee or just generally it wasn't part of your plan for the year for that to be like such a big race?
No, it was more the knee. I think before that, I didn't necessarily plan to do London originally, but after Worlds and... Yeah. Having to DNF from that, I needed a good race.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to finish the year on that note. So I was like, right, I'm going to, you know, Worlds was it was an incredible experience overall, but it was a disappointing race.
Yeah.
And London is the next best thing. You know, it was just the most amazing atmosphere on your home streets. And it was the one, you know, if I was going to do another race, I probably wouldn't have bothered with another marathon. But London being there, I was like, this is my opportunity to redeem myself. And so, that then became... I did actually have a lot of expectations for it before I got hit by a knee and hit by a car and kind of my knee put pay to everything.
Yeah. when a day is going well, do you know early on, do you actually get a sense within like the first 4 or 5 miles, you're like, actually, I feel great and this is going to be a good race? Or is it something that actually you have to wait until mile 20 to realise like... how it's going to go for you?
I think with a marathon, you can never be that sure until you get to the really mile, you know, the last 10K. I do I think especially this year, you know, I was going along knowing that, okay, I'm getting through it, but it was literally take each mile at a time. And I was getting through it, but I was like, at any point my knee could just give out.
Yeah.
And that could be it. And yeah, I think generally in a marathon, you know, you see so many people absolutely flying till mile 20 and then fall off a cliff. So I think, you know, in shorter races, maybe you can get an idea from the get-go that you feel great. But I think marathon, you can never, can never bank it.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you think that the potential of your knee just giving up, did that change your strategy from how you would have run the race anyway? Or were you just like, oh, I've got to go all in anyway?
I think I just went all in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and tried not to think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And just, yeah, I mean, the marathon's such a mental game. So actually a lot of my prep in that 10 days was, I mean, I couldn't actually do much running. So a lot of my prep was just like, right, how am I going to deal with my knee and the mental struggle of having an injury in the race?
Yeah.
And it was, yeah, a lot of, I mean, I pulled on everything. And, you know, when it started, it wasn't, I was aware of it. It was sore throughout the race, but I was like, right, okay, if it doesn't get any worse, I can do it. And then I was thinking when it got sort of twinged a few times, I was like, right, okay, starting to hurt. But, you know, this is my coach, actually. I spoke to him just before the race. He didn't know about my knee, but he just happened to say the right thing. He was like, remember, when it starts hurting, that's when you show everyone how strong you are. And I just played that in my head and I applied it to my knee. I was like, right, it's hurting, but this is where I show everyone how strong I am. So it was really, you know, it just became a nice mental battle that I was just determined to not let it stop me.
Yeah, amazing. And you finished 10th overall, and I guess you would have finished ahead of lots of people who've been elite athletes their whole life. But your story is really incredible because that's actually not the trajectory that you've been on, is it?
Yeah, not at all. I started taking running seriously at the start of lockdown. And before that, I ran for Club and Chasers, my local club. But it was very much a weekend hobby.
Mm. Okay.
And yeah. I was working in corporate law, so yeah, it was a 100-mile-an-hour job, worked late nights. The evening sessions were pretty much a write-off most of the time. So I really did most of my running to and from work just to save getting on the tube and a few sessions with the chasers. But, you know, it was very much amateur level. I think I was running kind of 35 miles a week. I did the London Marathon twice before, but I remember I got through it with basically doing 3 sessions a week, and no other running.
Apart from
maybe like a run to and from work.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was very much my approach. And then lockdown changed everything for me when I got made redundant and suddenly had 3 months garden leave and decided to just set myself a challenge and essentially train like a pro athlete for 3 months.
Right.
And I actually started training for triathlon originally, but that then, like everything else in lockdown, got cancelled about 3 times. So that was where I kind of, really upped my game and started taking it more seriously. Got some help from a coach with my running and it just snowballed. Completely snowballed. And
amazing.
Yeah.
What a lockdown project, yeah.
I didn't do that.
I baked a bit of bread, I think.
I didn't even do that.
I did also do that, but it was less successful than my running.
Yeah, my baking of bread wasn't very good either, yeah.
I think I had a few explosions of the sourdough starter and gave up.
I mean, because you mentioned the previous marathons that you've done, you're obviously a very talented runner. Like, you had a natural ability there because you ran sub-3 for the first and then 3:04 for the subsequent one.
Yeah.
So there's like, that's already like, as you say, like amateur level, that's kind of top end.
Yeah.
So it's not like me trying to chase a pro dream during lockdown.
It's not too late.
No, it is too late. So there was kind of like, there was that, did you have a sense that you weren't getting enough from yourself, or was it literally just like, I've got the time to try this?
It was more, I've got the time to try it. I mean, honestly, I didn't, you know, 2:55, 3:04 is, you're right, I was sort of top, I'd say 10% of the women in my club, but it's still such a big jump.
It's not half an hour.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I know that I knew that was where the pro level was at. I was like, oh, well, it didn't even come into my imagination that I could get to that level.
Huge, it's a huge leap in time.
Yeah,
like, I mean,
exactly.
It's tricky when you talk about time because it's all relative to everyone else's performance. But the difference between an amateur running 3 hours and the pros running 2.5, that time at the sharp end, making up those differences
is huge.
The
minutes become really hard at the end.
Yeah.
But I actually, when I, after was training for triathlon, and then that got cancelled. And then my kind of secondary goal was actually to go for a Surrey Vest. So that was sort of the level that I thought I could top out at. And I was like, right, if I work really hard, I can probably run for my county. And that was very much the goal. And then, my coach was like, no, you're going for an England Vest.
Amazing. Did you have like a breakthrough performance then, where you were a bit like, actually, I have underestimated like the ceiling for me?
I think the first marathon I did after, I mean, I didn't really have much opportunity to race anything
before that date,
really, because of lockdown. And it was still, we were still in lockdown, but we found a marathon that kind of just, you know, those ones that like just complied with the rules. And it was this random one in Cheshire round just country roads. I think it was 9 laps. And you went off in groups of, I don't know, 10 or something. And it was classified as elite only, but it wasn't that elite. I think it was sub 3-ish. And that was, I ran 2:30 and 58 there.
Yeah, wow.
That was like a 25-minute chunk off my PB, and that was really where. I think, to be honest, before that time, I hadn't had a benchmark and I hadn't been running with anyone or had any races.
Yeah.
So I'd just sort of seen my times gradually get better, but that was the date when I was like, oh, I've actually...
Hang on a sec,
taken a big leap here.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, that race environment brings it out, right? Like, if you're training in lockdown and you're not with people and all that sort of stuff, and then you're turn the line suddenly and you've got an opportunity to go and follow the right person or just steam off on your own. I don't know how the race went, but, you know, it's kind of, you suddenly have this moment where you're going to go, oh, this has worked.
Then I think when you see your time sort of up there with other actual professional marathon runners and elites, you're like, oh, actually, I'm there.
I'm in that bracket. How do you do it though? Like, what is it? Is it mainly a volume thing? Is it mainly a time and dedication thing? Or are there kind of breakthrough ways of training or certain sessions that you were like, that's actually made a huge difference to my marathon running?
I think it's honestly just, this is a really boring answer because I wish I could give a recipe of this is what you can go and do. Go and do these 3 sessions and suddenly your life will change.
Yeah.
But it's just honestly consistency. And I mean, I did probably, well, I basically tripled my training.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you get fit.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's hard to do it. It's hard to, I think in a way I've been lucky that I've been able to tolerate that huge increase in training because it is difficult to do. And, you know, I definitely haven't gone unscathed. I've had a fair few injuries along the way that are kind of as a result of ramping it up massively. But yeah, I went from, you know, running 35 miles a week to, actually, the first marathon build I did sort of 75, but still that's double my mileage.
It's a low end, isn't it, for a leap? But
and then with cross training on top of that, so it was a huge increase in training, and just the consistency. Because before, mainly because of work, you know, running was very much a hobby. I mean, I still kind of think it is my hobby, but it was very much a hobby. And if I had a busy week at work, then I might not run at all. And then you lose that consistency, and you just, that's I think where you. You just need to build week on week on week to really see the changes.
Yeah. It's a good answer, isn't it? And it's probably the reason why a lot of people don't do it. So it's difficult and you've got to do consistent. It's not particularly exciting, some of it. It's actually just consistently doing it again and again.
Yeah. And I think it's the big kind of mental change is you can't just run when you're motivated to run. You have to commit.
Right. Okay.
Whether or not you want to go out, you have to go out. And I think that was a change for me and getting a coach to kind of hold me accountable. And actually before, you know, I would just run if I wanted to run to work and not get the tube.
Yeah.
And if it was raining, then I might not run for a week. Like, no, I want to run for ages. But yeah, that was a big change.
Right,
you just get out every day, whatever you're feeling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were talking before we started recording just about how this is a bit of an off season. You've not been running a lot recently, a couple of injuries that you've been sorting out, but how that... when you had a job and the sort of like the non-running bit of life and the balance between that and now this is your job and the not running and how that you've quite conflicted and but you're also quite good at not running. Like we've interviewed pros who really find it hard to step back.
Got people really keeping the reins on me. I've learnt that I have no self-control with holding back and taking rest. Yeah. So I now have someone who makes me take rest.
Excellent.
But is it when taking the time when it was a tussle between the working life and the running life and the sort of the two bits and pieces, having the downtime now as your job and actually being forced to sort of slow down, do you think that the old career side of you has actually kind of like allowed you to be a bit more calm about it? Or do you think now that it's all job, all running job, that you're kind of like still stressing about it?
Yeah, I think I'm more stressed about actually, because when I was working, I could go into the office and actually throw myself 100% into work, which is what I should have been doing because it was my job. But when, you know, it was actually almost a bit of a relief to be like, right, okay, I can be 100% on work and not sitting there being like, oh, I need this conference call to end now because I need to leave for training. So I had that, and I had that distraction. But now it's like, it's funny because it's actually my job to rest and recover as well, but that doesn't come naturally. I think because running is now my job, I think there's definitely part of me that's like, I should always be running.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you have a marathon session that is a great gauge for how fit you are? If you're like, if I nail that session, I know that I'm in like decent shape.
Yeah, there are a few. I think there's a great session I've done a few times, which is 3x10K or 3x6 miles, depending on kind of how you spin it. And that's always been sort of the peak of my training block.
Right.
And the one that I'll do, I normally do about 4 weeks out.
I like marathon pace.
Yes.
Okay.
Start a bit slower than marathon pace, then a bit quicker than marathon pace. And that one, if you nail that one, there's kind of a big build up to it. And that's where I always, it's like a dress rehearsal as well. I'll wear my race kit and get all my drinks ready and do the full thing. And that's, I think, that's a really good benchmark. Actually, this time I had a new session, which I loved. And it actually focused a lot on like the last 10K of the marathon.
Okay.
So it was just... it was pretty much 3x10K, but you just don't stop. So okay, it was just progressive. It was, 6 miles.
And getting quicker the whole time. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I came out of that session, I actually did it at altitude as well. And it was brilliant. It was the best session of my whole block.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm ready. Oh, I know I can do that. And I pulled on it on the last 10K. I remember the last 10K, I was like, hang on, this is the bit I've practiced.
I've got it.
So, I think if you can... Basically, any session that prepares you for that last 10K and hitting marathon pace on knackered legs, that is great prep.
Yeah, a confidence booster.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, it's such a big session, isn't it? It's not one we could do at lunchtime, I don't think.
No.
No, I think
maybe just the 10K. Maybe we won't take it out.
No.
I don't think you'd do much work in the afternoon either.
But I think it's that psychological bit of it. It's great to come out of physiologically you feel fine-tuned and you're kind of all good.
Yeah.
And you kind of, but when you can tap into that at the end of a race, knowing full well that you've pushed possibly harder in that moment, that's when those sorts of sessions really help.
Yeah, definitely. Just so you don't freak out when it starts to really hurt.
Yeah, which it will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is the marathon.
Yeah. If we spin back to when we last spoke in March, at the end of the podcast, we kind of asked you about the change in career and sponsorship. Mm. You managed your response quite nicely and sort of said that there may be things coming. And, and about a week later, you signed for Puma. So how did that come about, and how's it been signing, you know, like a proper pro deal?
Yeah, it's been amazing. It's actually quite funny how it came about. Like they slipped into my DMs.
Oh, right.
The modern way.
Yeah, I got a message on Instagram from them, which I don't think is the normal way that people
They're not like major corporations tend to approach athletes, for sure.
But it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been brilliant. They're honestly a great brand to work with. Mm. And they've just got a lot of momentum. Mm. And, you know, they're quite new to the road running scene, really. They've done a lot in track for a long time, but road running scene, they're really quite new to it and have put so much into it and so much into the shoes. And honestly, the team are just so passionate about it.
Yeah.
It's a really fun brand to work with. And it's, yeah, just been involved with a lot of cool events with them. And it's a lot more than just running in the kit.
Okay.
Which has been amazing. And I think at the time I was actually speaking with Nike as well, and I got a very different picture from Nike as to kind of how the relationship would work. Right. And it was much more like, you are the runner, you run in the kit, and we pay you to do that, and that's it.
Mm.
But yeah, Puma is much more of a kind of family, and you're involved with the brand, and it's a full kind of, it makes so much more of the career.
Mm.
And yeah, it's been brilliant.
And they've got a super shoe, right? You presumably were wearing like a carbon plated shoe in London.
Yeah. They've got two. Well, they've got two iterations of the first one now. And I actually ran in the second one. So I ran in the Deviate Elite 2, which is not actually out yet. I have so many people like, where can I buy it?
Where can I get the shoe?
But it's not out yet. But it's the Deviate Elite was their first shoe.
Right.
So the second one is the version 2. And then they've got the Fast R as well, which is
That's that pink and orange
stack.
One.
Oh, it yeah, you've been running cool. in that, haven't you? Yeah.
It looks very cool. It looks very kind of spacey, and you can see the carbon plate in it, so it's very cool-looking shoe. But, yeah, I actually run in both of them.
Yeah.
They're great.
Nice.
I mean, it is interesting, like, how the brand and the shoe is now so much part and parcel of, like, every... Like, so New York was at the weekend. I don't know when this is going out, but anyway, New York happened recently, and... You know, the winner is an Under Armour athlete, and she was wearing their new Elite shoe. Mm. And the story is just like, surprise winner in this shoe.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Tell me about the shoe.
It becomes so much more of a thing. When you were looking to have a sponsor, and obviously Puma is slightly newer to the game than Nike were, as you say, or whoever else you were talking to, did that come into it? Were you kind of like going through their product list and being like, actually, I'm going to need something like that now? Or... Was it sold? You know, you kind of knew that most brands are going to have something.
No, it was a really big factor for me. Mm. And I, to be honest, before I spoke to Puma, I hadn't run in any of their shoes.
Yeah.
So, and obviously for anyone, but particularly I think for marathon, you know, the shoes are so important. You've got to have something that really suits you to get through 26.2 without any discomfort, because you do not want any shoe issues. And I'd run in Nike and I'd run in Adidas, and That's all I'd run in, basically.
Yeah.
So it was a really big consideration, but I think I was first of all convinced, just because they taught me so much about how they made the shoes. You know, they spent, I think, 3 years making these shoes.
Right.
The innovation that went into them was insane. Mm. And they invited me out to Germany to go and see the basically where the magic happens, where they make the shoes. And so I was kind of sold on, right, okay, they're going to be good shoes.
Yeah.
So really then the question was just, do they fit and are they comfy? Do they suit me?
Yeah.
So I did have I had a good sort of 2-3 months of testing them. And I actually started speaking to them straight after Seville. So it was, I had a bit of time off, then got into it. So it was I had quite a long period of build up just testing the shoes and testing loads of different models and checking that they worked for me. So yeah, it was a huge consideration.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I think like the difference that shoes can make
Yeah.
It's never been more marked, has it? So you need to have something that can make you competitive.
It's really in the recent history of the sport that you've got people working, running in shoes outside their branded contract because they weren't going to get the competitive benefits from the sponsor. So, it's a part and parcel of, I guess, like signing a deal these days is making sure that they deliver on that side of things.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Other than buying a lovely carbon plated shoe, what advice would you have to anyone who might be starting their spring marathon training around now? If you had any kind of training advice or just general running advice?
I think if starting a build up now, just, that's quite a long time to build up. And actually, I mean, it's great to have that long so you don't rush it.
Yeah.
But I think just take it slowly and maybe plan the whole block. And I think a classic mistake is you sign up for a marathon, get really excited and go absolutely 100% into the training in week one because you're excited about the marathon. But, it's a long time and doing, if you're trying to kind of build up your volume, just do it slowly. Just kind of plan how you're going to build up the miles each. I think the rule of thumb is sort of every third week, increase your mileage a bit.
Okay, yeah.
And that basically gives your body time to adapt to the new higher mileage. So I think careful planning and going at it with a nice, you want like the nice looking Strava curve of mileage.
Yeah, rather than some sort of like gigantic ramp.
Rather than like the Alps,
exactly. Is there a part of your training that you've particularly focused on? So say like now you're sort of like in a base phase again.
Mm.
Is that like a period that you find, there's a podcast we did with Tom Craggs, we're talking about base training and the sort of like position in the block and how important it is. Is there a phase for you that you always consider the most important? Would you say it's the base level, or do you find it's more the sort of like the more sharper end stuff later on?
To be brutally honest, I think it's the first time I've actually ever done a base phase.
There we go.
I've rolled from one marathon to the next and either been injured or just going full pelt at marathon training.
Yeah.
But having said that, I think the base phase is incredibly important. And I'm, of course, itching to get back to running. But at the same time, I'm enjoying just being able to take the time to build the foundations, because you've got to do that. And I'm getting in the gym a lot and working on all those things that you actually don't really do as much in marathon training because you're knackered.
Mm.
And just, I think, building some strong foundations, your body's got to carry you through 26 miles. So you've got to be strong, and any weakness will come out in the marathon. So I think, base phase is so important, and just kind of like niggle prevention and correcting all the tiny little issues that aren't really an issue, but they could be if you don't nip them in the bud.
Yeah. Looking forward, what's the ambition now? You've done so well at London. There's such an amazing kind of rise. What are you shooting for?
Well, Paris 2024 is a big goal.
Yeah.
So, and it's really not that long away. So I think next year really is going to be the time when I've got to really get my time down.
Mm. So what are we talking here? Like, what sort of time would you have to run, you think, to get it? Is it 2:25, something like this, or?
Well, the qualifying time is 2:28.
Yeah.
Well, actually, they haven't released the policy yet, and I'm assuming it's 2:28 because that's the world standard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's, I think, realistically, to be competitive, it's going to have to be like 2:24, 2:23.
Right.
Okay. Just because that's where the standard of women's running is at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing, but it's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. When is the first qualifying?
God, I don't know.
So the window is, I think it runs from January next year, and then you'll have through till probably like end of April 2024 to get the time. So there's kind of a few opportunities to do it and cut down my time in chunks, hopefully.
I think with you, it's really exciting because possibly, unlike some other runners who might be running kind of at a top level for a while, who might have a better like sense of where the ceiling would be for them, for you, that the possibilities are maybe more exciting because actually you're still relatively new to marathon running.
Yeah. And I do feel like, I do feel like there are so many more improvements I can make in so many aspects of my training because I haven't done that for the last 10 years or whatever. I've still got all those improvements that I can make. And I think, it's not, I do kind of feel like it's not just marginal games and chipping away at the seconds. Yeah, it's exactly. Actually, like, I could take a good chunk off still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you know, have you got like a marathon in mind to do it out, or is that kind of, that depend on a few too many factors?
I think it's kind of hard to plan this far out, but yeah. I would love to do Berlin.
Yeah, okay.
And actually, timing-wise, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Mm. I think after this year, it was such a fast race, and it's, yeah, it just seems like a really great one to do.
Have you ever run it before?
No.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
No, but I've heard a lot of good things.
Have you done Berlin?
I haven't actually. I'd like to.
I haven't either.
Yeah.
Well, let's go.
Oh, let's go. The Olympics, here we come.
Team trip. Off we
I
go.
I feel like with all the beer and parties afterwards, I'll get a good contingent of supporters as well. I could get a fan club along.
That'll be the we could just turn up like afterwards, actually.
The family will definitely visit. You know, when you go, I'm doing a race, and they go, man, yeah, and you go, it's Berlin. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, okay, sure, I'll come in.
Exactly.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah.
Good party.
Has there been any, like, a great revelation for you in the in your processes, like be it diet or a training, or you know, I'm just because it's such a steep learning curve that you've kind of gone into that you kind of we don't really get that in the modern world of athletics and like and running. You don't kind of get that huge sort of shift in like lifestyle.
Yeah.
Was there anything like did you suddenly realize like, oh yeah, like if I just eat that, I'm like that made a huge difference, or like my diet before was terrible and now I'm like someone's telling me like this is fantastic, It was obviously going well for you before anyway, but just the shift to just time, I guess, being the main thing.
Yeah, I think time and just and consistency. But, I mean, I wouldn't say there's been one revelation. So there have just been so many revelations.
Right.
And I think kind of more recently, a big one has just been about recovery. And that's what I used to really neglect. And my approach was cram as much training in as you could.
Yeah.
And as much as your body could tolerate and just, you know, that will get me there. And actually to get any, it's not just about not getting injured, it's about adapting and actually improving. And I hadn't been taught all this growing up because I didn't do athletics.
Yeah.
And just learning about kind of the more sciencey aspect of actually how recovery benefits has been amazing. And I think especially when I was working full time, you know, I'd get up, train, go to training in the evening, get back late, kind of couldn't sleep because I was wired from training.
Mm.
And then you'd be up at 6 and do it all again.
Yeah.
And in my mind was that was like, okay, this is how I get good.
Mm.
And yeah, it got me good. But I've realised the importance of recovery. And I've seen, since I'm lucky enough to now just do running for my job, that has been the main difference, to be honest.
Yeah.
My training hasn't changed that dramatically, but it's just been the recovery and the gains I've noticed from that.
Well, thanks very much for coming on the Runner's World podcast. Great to talk to you about your marathon journey, and we wish you all the best for the Olympics in 2024.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for watching this episode of the Runner's World podcast. Please do subscribe to the channel. If you're listening on a traditional format, just subscribe to the podcast, and thanks for watching.
Told you. What a pro.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.